We're going to talk about obstacles, and you know, if you leave a sci-fi geek alone long enough, they will figure out a way to work Star Wars into a sermon. They just will do it, especially in this year when we're bringing all the cool Star Wars stuff back, and it's all been a big... You know I was going to figure out a way at some point this year to work Star Wars into a sermon. And I didn't really have to work that hard because, well, Star Wars is about this guy. And if you don't recognize him, let me help you out a little bit. His name is Luke Skywalker. And he is the young protege. Luke's got power. He does. He is connected to this thing called the Force, and it's supposed to give him all this power. And Luke's power is kind of useful. I mean, he can use it to stack rocks, and he can use it to make a droid float. And if there's a lightsaber just out of his reach, he can stretch out his hand and make it come right to him. All the little things he seems to be able to do. But the big things, not so much. Now, there's another character that was in that little clip I showed you. His name is Yoda. Now, Yoda is one of my favorite characters. I love the way he talks. I love his little voice, okay? I'm not going to try to do the imitation, because I don't want to embarrass members of my family that hate when I try to do that voice, but that's okay. But Yoda's also got power. But Yoda's power seems so much bigger than Luke's. Because while Luke can stack rocks and snatch lightsabers, Yoda can move ships. Yoda can pull ships out of a sinking water. And the funny thing is this ship just comes floating right out. And Luke is just looking at it. Did you notice when it touched down the ground, he had to go up and touch it to make sure. Yeah, it really is a ship. It really did happen. And the funny thing is that Luke's power and Yoda's power are one and the same. And at this point in their life, there's only one thing that makes that power different. What did Luke say when he touched that ship and he walked over to Yoda and he looked at it? He said, "I don't believe it." And I love Yoda's response. That is why you fail. You do not fail because the power that you have is insufficient. You fail because you don't believe in the power that you've been given. I got to tell you, I don't have to go much further than that. That's convicting. That's a thought for us, the church. Luke's failure was that he just didn't believe in the power that he had been given. We've been walking down this hall of faith, and I hope you see where we're going. We're going to talk about obstacles this morning, why it is they stand in our way. And in this hall of faith, we've been looking at these various pictures that come from Hebrews chapter 11. And we've been taking them picture by picture and looking at them one by one. And we've been hanging their pictures over here on our wall to remind us where we've been. And I'm fascinated by what puts people into this hall. And I got a feel for the guy today, because he's kind of an unsung hero. Many of us kind of pass over him, even though he's got an entire book of the Bible named after him. And even when he gets to the Hall of Faith, well, he doesn't even get his due. His picture, he doesn't even get his name mentioned. His name is Joshua. And in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30, this is how the writer of Hebrews hangs this picture. "By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days." Well, how do I know this is about Joshua? Well, hang tight. We'll tell you the story here in just a bit. But here is Joshua, the unsung hero. And when he gets his picture hung in the Hall of Fame, they don't even mention him. They mention the obstacle that stood in front of them. They don't talk about Joshua's great faith. They just talk about what Joshua managed to accomplish. So let me give Joshua his just due here. After having spent 40 years in the wilderness and at Sinai, the children of Israel were now stationed at the eastern bank of the Jordan River. They were just north of the Dead Sea. They were under the new management of this young guy named Joshua. I call him a young guy. He probably wasn't so very young. Their longtime leader, Moses, who we looked at last week, well, he didn't make the journey across the Jordan River. He was not allowed to come into the Promised Land. So here they sat. 5 centuries earlier, when they had gone down to Egypt, they were now back in the land. And they're sitting there, and out on the horizon, they look. And there's Jericho. There is this city that is sitting there in their way. It's the first obstacle they have to overcome. And I want to tell you, it's a doozy. Talk about the city in a minute, but let me tell you about Joshua's story. See, we don't give Joshua enough credit because we just think Joshua is this guy that came out of nowhere. Not so much. Joshua, he started young. Numbers chapter 11, verse 28 says, Joshua, son of Nun, who had been Moses' aide since youth, spoke up and said to Moses, my Lord, stop them. So you need to glean out of that verse that Joshua had been in training since he was a little tight. I guess the knee-high to a grasshopper thing. He had been following Moses around. And well, Joshua in his own right, even before we ever get to the book of Joshua, he was a leader. This is what it says in Exodus chapter 17, verse 9. Now Moses said to Joshua, choose some of our men and go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands. Who was given the job to go fight the battle? It was Joshua. Who was going to recruit the men to go fight the battle? It was Joshua. So even before Moses ever decided that he wasn't going to get to the promised land, I got to find a new leader, Joshua was already there. Joshua was already fighting battles. And Joshua, this man had some great faith. He had some great faith even before they ever saw the city of Jericho at that point. This is what we see in Numbers chapter 14, verses 6 through 8. Story we're very familiar with. Joshua, son of Nun. How'd you like that? You're even, talk about not getting your due, you're even the son of Nun. Okay, but anyway, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephthah, who were among those who explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. The Lord is pleased with us. He will give us the land that is flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. He is looking at this land, and while all the other spies, the 10 other spies, they saw giants and cities, Joshua was interested in the buffet. He saw milk and honey. While they were seeing obstacles that couldn't be moved, Joshua saw a God that could take care of everything. Even to the point that when they came back, and all the people were like, no, we can't do this. You don't understand. We can't go over there and do this. 10 people were saying, you can't go take this land. It says Caleb and Joshua, they tore their clothes, and that was a sign of remorse for what Israel was about to do. Joshua had some great faith, even as a younger man. I admire that. One thing that we usually forget is that Joshua had face-to-face meetings with God. Exodus chapter 33, verses 7 through 11. I read this to you last week, but I stopped the verse short on purpose. It's called the cliffhanger. I want you to hear the whole verse now. Exodus chapter 33, verses 7 through 11. Now Moses used to take a tent and pitch it outside of the camp some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. Anyone inquiring of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. And whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people rose and stood at the entrance of the tent, watching Moses until he entered the tent. As Moses went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and would stay at the entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. Whenever the people saw the pillar of cloud stand at the entrance of the tent, they stood and worshipped, each at the entrance of their tent. The Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one would speak to a friend. Then Moses would return to the camp, but young baby Joshua, son of Nun, did not leave the tent. When Moses used to have these campouts with God and these powwows with God, who was sitting there the whole time listening? It was Joshua. When they were wandering around the wilderness, it was Joshua who was beginning to understand who God is. So this isn't a guy that just came out of nowhere. In fact, God chose him. Moses didn't pick this guy to be the leader of Israel. This was God's decision. Numbers chapter 27, verses 18 through 20 read, so the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man who is in the spirit of leadership, and lay your hand on him. Have him stand before Eleazar, the priest, and the entire assembly, and commission him in their presence. Give him some of your authority so the whole Israelite community will obey him. I bet Moses is kind of thinking, he's going to get the whole Israelite community to obey him. I'm still working on that trick. I can part the Red Sea, but these people don't listen to me, God. But okay, God. I'll do it. So if it was God's idea that Moses, when you don't get to go into the promised land, this is the guy that I want in charge of my people. And you know what? I think God chose Moses. He's not without his faults. He had some arrogance issues. He sometimes got ahead of God and decided to try to do things his own way, and it cost him. But you know what? This man, he has some great faith. So let's switch ways just a little bit, and let's talk about this obstacle. So here they are. They crossed over the Jordan River, and if you know the story, they came over the Jordan River, and they took one step at a time, and God opened the water as they went. They got to the other side. God closed the water, and you know what that meant, right? You ain't going back to Egypt, folks. There is no escape. You're over on this side of the mountain, and on this side of the river, and here you shall stay. You now have put all of your eggs in one basket. And then God said, by the way, now you need to circumcise all your soldiers. I'm sure. They were like, couldn't we have done that before we crossed the water? Seriously? Because now we're out here on this desert plain with most of our army incapacitated, nowhere else to go, and they're looking out on the horizon, and there sit Jericho. Man, what an obstacle this thing was. Now, we kind of over-dramatized this, so I want to make sure we put this in perspective, that we understand exactly what this is. We're really talking about around 10 to 12 acres of property. That's how big the city was. This was not something that was the size of New York. So when you hear people talk about somebody marching around the city in one day, we always get the picture of them trying to march around like Stanton in one day, which really isn't going to be a possible thing to do. We're talking about a city that was about 10 to 12 acres in size. Now, there are probably some people that are sitting here today, and you own 10 to 12 acres of property that are yours, so you get, if you've ever had to cut that grass, you understand it's more property than you really think it is. 10 to 12 acres is a substantial piece of property, especially during this time. The population, not counting the military that probably have been there, because remember, these people have been sitting here on this plain for a while, and I'm sure they're starting to move military people down there, but the population was probably about 1,200 people. So we're not talking about a city that's millions and millions of people strong. We're not talking about that. But understand, the size of the land and the population of the city were not the issue. That is not what made Jericho so fortified. You see, Jericho was kind of more like an outpost at this point. It was at the leading edge, and when you're coming in across, that's the first city you're going to get to. And so they were going to do something with it to make sure that city didn't fall. And so they had these walls built around it. And the walls were built in two levels. First set of walls that you look at when you get up to Jericho, archaeologists, this did not come from scripture, this came from archaeological digs, so I'm just going to kind of go with the root facts here. The lower wall height, the first set of walls that you get to, were about 12 to 17 feet high and about 6.5 feet deep. So that means you could just about drive a car on the top of that wall going around it. Okay, so it's about 6.5 feet deep and about 12 to 17 feet high. That's a pretty good wall. But that was the lower wall, because inside there was a plateau and there was another set of walls. And these other set of walls were about 8 to 10 feet high, and they were about another 5 feet deep. That's a lot of rock. I am glad that I did not have to build that wall. I have a flower bed that I'm very proud of. I built it out in my front yard, and it's built out of these paving stones, and it took me a few weeks to do it because I had to get up there and make it all level. But I had these little bitty rocks. They're about this big, and I had to put them in place one at a time. And every now and then my son would come out and make sure I hadn't got mad at him and crushed a few of them, you know, because I'm not good at this stuff. But I persevered, and I made this wonderful little area that's about 6 foot by about 3 foot wide, all covered in rock, all nice and level. And I'm very proud of those little rocks. I could not imagine taking this undertaking, building the walls of Jericho, rock by rock and piece by piece, with no forklifts. This was an impressive city. And if staring at those walls weren't enough, you have to take into account this idea that it was fortified by four towers. At each corner, they had these towers that were going up around there that would take the walls that would make them even stronger. And you know what that also meant? Since there were towers, there were windows. You know what they stationed in the windows, right? People that were shooting arrows. So that means they're going to be shooting down. And you ever heard the term fish in a barrel? Try taking Jericho. That's what it was like. Fish in a barrel. Easy pickings. And then to make that matters even worse, as you stared at Jericho, you had this thing called a ditch. Now, most people don't realize about this ditch. Jericho was on a floodplain. Jordan River floods. We don't want our city to get flooded, so how do we stop the water from going into the city? Well, it's very simple. They built what would basically look like a castle moat around it. And this ditch, I forgot to put the dimensions up there. So let's go ahead and I'll tell you the dimensions then. This ditch was 27 feet wide by 9 feet deep. So that means in order just to get to the walls, you'd have to go down through this trench and back up. Talk about fish in a barrel. Once your army's down into that rock, into that ditch, you've got nowhere to go. And they're going to pick you off like nothing. And I'm sure they're looking at this thing like, really? Are you sure we can't swim that Jordan River? Joshua, really? That's what you want us to look at? And if Joshua being the new leader and the obstacle wasn't enough, then you had to start talking about God's battle plan. And I love this. Here's the flat battle plan that we're going to use to build this, to basically drop this mighty fortress. The first 6 days, we're going to march around once, blow horns, and go home. That's the plan. And then on the seventh day, we're going to walk around the city 7 times, and we're going to blow horns, and we're going to shout. We're going to make a lot of noise. Does anybody here think this sounds like a good battle plan? I mean, at least when you're going to go after Jericho, you should work about the element of surprise. But God says, this is what you're going to do. Walls fall, Israel wins. I'm trying to go in to sell that one to a group of people. Are you kidding me, Joshua? What is it that you're thinking? You think we're going to just walk around these walls. We're going to walk around that ditch, on the outside of that ditch, and we're going to sit there and we're going to just walk around 6 times and go back home and eat pork and beans on our campfire, and then we're going to come back out here and we're going to march around 7 times on the final day and blow a trumpet and shout, and the walls are just going to magically disappear. Yeah, that's what God said. That's what he said. I almost feel sorry for Joshua. That's got to be a hard lesson to go give somebody. They probably think, where's Moses at this point? They might be trying to elect a new leader. This does not sound like sound business strategy here. They're going to pick us off. As we're marching around, they could probably shoot us when we go, another plane, please. So I'm like, God. But here's what I want you to know about Joshua. Before God ever gave him this plan, this battle plan, this idea of how those walls were going to fall, there is something that we need to understand. Joshua had a strategy about him that just made this all work. You see, I don't think at this point this was a hard leap for Joshua. I don't think Joshua's faith had to grow leaps and bounds at this point. When God told him that plan, Joshua didn't have to give a second thought to it. Because Joshua's faith had been growing all of those years. Remember, this man had spent 40 years out there in the wilderness. He had watched an entire generation die. And the only ones left were him and his buddy Caleb. All the rest of them were younger than him at this point. So Joshua didn't have a big time with this. Because Joshua had a strategy about his life. And the first thing that Joshua always had is he had to know your enemy. Listen to this. Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent 2 spies from Shittim. Go and look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. Now I want you to see Joshua had learned from Moses. This wasn't going to be a committee. Nobody's going to come back and report about giants in the land, about how big the city is. I just want to take 2 people, and I'm going to send them over there. And you go out and you scout the land. Don't tell me about the milk and honey, because I've already seen it all. But I want you to go and scout. But since the last time we were here, I want you to come back, and I want you to tell me about Jericho. This is good strategy, isn't it? Go out and survey the land and realize how big your enemy is and how deep those walls are. Go out and make sure you understand who your enemy is before you go and try to win a battle. That's sound military strategy, isn't it? We want to know this. But then Joshua made another step that sometimes I think we forget, and that is he put God first. This is what Joshua chapter 3, verses 10 through 11 says. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Pezzites, Jerusites, Amorites, and Jebusites. See, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth will go into the Jordan ahead of you. Joshua made it a habit. And whenever they went out into their little military formation, and whenever they were going to go out and do battle, they put the Ark of the Covenant, the symbol of God, who God is, right out there in front, basically telling the world, we're marching behind God. That's sound strategy, folks. That's strategy that maybe sometimes I think the church needs to adapt. Now, there was another thing that Joshua did is he prepared these Israelites to go out and do battle. Don't forget the sacrifice. I know you're thinking, didn't we leave sacrifice back at Abel? Have you noticed all these guys kind of had this in common? All the people that were hanging on this wall, they had this love of sacrifice. Joshua was no different. Joshua chapter 5, verse 10. On the evening of the 14th month, while camped at Gilgal in the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated Passover. Now, you would think, sitting out on a plane, looking at a city full of soldiers and people, knowing that you've got a lot of time to spend, and you're going to be doing a lot of battle, you think maybe we could just give up on the festivities for a little bit? Uh-uh. Joshua wanted to make sure the Israelites didn't forget the idea of sacrifice. Remember what Passover is. It was the festival or the feast that was put in place to commemorate the Exodus from Egypt. The night that the angel of death passed over the Israelites because they sacrificed the lamb and because they put the blood on the doorpost and the symbol that was put out there so that these people could go free from Israel. And before they ever start to go into battle, Joshua said, time out. Look at the moon. It's Passover time. So everybody go to your tent, find yourself a lamb, and we're going to celebrate Passover. We're going to honor God before I ever take my first step. Oh man. How oftentimes do we not take that time? There's something going on in our schedule and I'm way too busy to pray. There's something going on in our schedule and I'm way too busy to make the sacrifice to read God's word. There's something going on in my life and I'm just too busy. Joshua didn't do that. He made sure to call time out for the things that were important. Now here's a big one. Know who's leading you. Now remember, he's got some pretty big shoes to fill. Joshua's taking over from Moses, the legend. The man that parted the Red Sea, that made water come from a rock. The man that had conversations with God, appealed the pillar of fire, a cloud of dust. The man that had gone up on the mountain and saw God. Joshua was taking over from. And so I got a feeling that the temptation would be when you're taking over for a legend to make sure everybody understands I'm in charge. Not Joshua. I want you to listen to Joshua chapter 5, verses 13 through 15. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, are you for us or for our enemies? Neither, he replied. But as the commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Now I'm hearing Joshua saying, what are you talking about? You're the commander of the army of the Lord? That's my job. That's my title. I'm the one that puts together the military around here. I've been doing that even since the days of I'm the commander of the Lord. Joshua knew his place. Then Joshua fell down on his face to the ground in reverence and asked him, what message does my Lord have for his servant? Joshua knew he was in charge of this battle. The commander of the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. I find that amazing. I mean, I know who I am. If there's a big task out there, I'm a project manager by trade, okay? So I understand you get a big task in front of you, you take the big task, and you break it down into its little parts, and after you break it down into its little parts, you make a list. And after you make a list, you figure out what you have time to do and what you don't have time to do and what you don't have time to do. You go and you find somebody else that can do the things that you don't have time to do because you have a goal of getting this thing done. See, I am a take-charge kind of person. You throw the ball in the middle of the playground and say, make rules to play a game, I'm probably going to end up with the ball. It's just who I am. I am a person that has a very hard time relinquishing control of anything that I think I'm supposed to be in charge of. I think sometimes we need to take a lesson from Joshua. He didn't just relinquish control. He fell down face to the ground in reverence. He called himself a servant, not a general. He understood this wasn't his battle. He knew who the leader was. And he had no problem making room for it. But Joshua did one more thing that makes Joshua's strategy the best strategy. And here it is. He put the plan into practice. This is what it says. And I almost thought I should stop saying son of Nun. It just sounds insulting, but that's how they wrote it. Joshua chapter 6, verses 6 through 7. So Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and the Lord of the Lord and the seven priests carrying the trumpets in front of it, and order the army, advance, march around the city with an armed guard going ahead of the Ark of the Lord. Now, I want to tell you something. This plan that God gave Joshua, this march around the city 6 times in 6 days and then 7 times on the seventh day, I'm glad he didn't give it to the church. And the reason is because it was such a simple plan. Anybody that could count to 7 could do this plan. But if he had given it to the church, in the way that we do things a lot of times when God gives us a plan, well, first we would have had to commit a committee meeting to do a feasibility study on whether or not we could actually get enough people together to go and do the march. Then we probably would have had to have a theological discussion about what it means to blow a trumpet. Does it mean to blow a trumpet once very loudly, or are we supposed to have a tune? Or are we supposed, what size trumpet are we supposed to use? Will you please define the word trumpet for me? Then we probably would have had to have another discussion about what it meant to shout. I mean, are we supposed to go 1, 2, 3 and all supposed to shout on 3? Or what are we supposed to shout? We would have had to come up with some kind of idea of what is the exact words that we're supposed to shout to make this magic work. We probably would have had discussions about, you know what? We're just marching around the city. You don't need all of us. So for the 6 day, why don't we do this in shifts? Tribe 1, take the first day. Tribe 2, take the second day. We would have done that. We would have divided the work because I don't want to be fully committed to go out there all 7 days. Come on, all we're doing is walking around the city. Come on. Doesn't this sound like a church discussion to you? Isn't this somehow how we take God's plan? God gives us something so simple to do that somebody that can count to 7 could do it, and we make it complicated. We have to have committee meetings and theological discussions to decide what it means to go into all the world. We have to have somebody define for us what it means to worship. God never made anything all this complicated. But I want you to see what Joshua did. He didn't go back to the tribe and take a survey poll. What he did? Boys, lace up your boots, get your swords, grab your spears, priests, load up the ark, everybody get in line, we're going to advance. I'll tell you as we're going, folks. You notice he did not exactly lay out the whole plan to them. He's just like, understand, God has given me a direction to go, and we are going to do it God's way. Because this is what God said. Now, he's talking about some great faith. Remember who he's dealing with. These are the Israelites. These are the people that on their best day, God called a bunch of stiff-necks. People that did not listen. Who they God had labeled the adulterous wife who kept wandering away from. That's who these people were. These were the people that on the bad report from 10 people decided, I'd rather go out and wander in the desert than go over there and fight a battle for God. These are the people that Joshua is now telling. Gather up your spears and swords. Let me tell you what the plan is going to be. We're going to march around the city 1 time, and then we're going to come back and sit. What? Yeah, and then the next day, we're going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, which would have been a problem for me, probably. But if we get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, we're going to get all dressed up in our gear again, and we're going to do it again. And we're going to repeat that exercise 6 times, and then the next morning, we're going to walk around the city 7 times. Oh, come on. 7? Come on. Wouldn't one do good? I mean, this is a lot of exercise. This gear is heavy that you're asking me to take here, Joshua. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. But Joshua took God exactly as his word. And Joshua's obstacles fell in the sight of his faith. Come on, we know how the story ended. They marched around that city seven times on that last day, and they yelled and they shouted and they blew their trumpets, and the ground shook and the walls came down. And here's the cool thing. It was like, where'd the walls go so they were out of the way? Remember that ditch? It ain't there no more. It's probably full of rock. Because down came those walls, and God just gave them a dynamic little path. Just go on into the city. I'm opening it up for you. That's what Joshua's faith did. It made the walls fall. So here's the question. Why are ours still standing? Why is it that we look at the mission that God has given us and it scares us? Why is it that we look at the mission that God has given us, what God has asked us to do, and the walls are still standing in our way? Is it because all that power is gone? Or is it because maybe we're missing one of Joshua's steps? Maybe we haven't taken the time to explore the territory that's out there. We haven't taken time to get to know the land that God has asked us to conquer. Because we're too busy sitting here in our camp. Maybe the issue is the fact that we're not willing to make any sacrifices to take that land. Maybe we're just satisfied with what I've got right here, and I'm not going to sacrifice one inch to take Jericho. Maybe it's we've forgotten who's the leader of this church. Because it's not the pastor. It's not the elders. The head of the church is Christ. And this is his battle plan that we're supposed to be fighting. Not ours. And maybe we've just forgotten that. Or maybe we've just gotten all the way down to that step where it's time to put it into practice, and we're still sitting here trying to debate the very essentials of what we're supposed to be doing. We can't even walk around the city once because we're still trying to figure out, well, how do we want to do this? Let me ask you something. Are you tired of losing? Are you tired of looking at the world and always seeing an insurmountable obstacle that you cannot overcome? Are you tired of looking at the year after year after year, and you look at the world and it's getting worse and worse and worse, and you just feel like, oh my gosh, we just have to pull in the drawbridges and hunker down and wait out the storm? That wasn't the plan. I challenge you to find me a scripture where it says, church, be patient, sit, wait. Those aren't the words that we get. What do we get? Go, teach, baptize, conquer, lead. Those are the words that God has given us. Easy, simple instructions that we have just made too complicated. And I have to tell you, I'm tired of losing battle after battle. I am. I'm tired of losing generation after generation. I'm tired. I want to see Stanton Church of Christ with the faith of Joshua. No matter how big the obstacle is, it does not matter, because guess what? We've got the power. We just have to be willing to do what God asked us to do. Now, God had made Joshua a promise. He said, Joshua, if you do this my way, then the walls will fall. You know, God made us a promise. He said, if you go into all the nations and you teach and you baptize and you make disciples, his promise was, I will be with you always. So, if you're looking to find God in your life 100% of the time, guess where God is? He's out there with our obstacles. He's just waiting for us to start marching. He's just waiting for us to do the simple things that he's asking us to do. Now, remember, I warned you, this might hurt your feelings. This might convict you a little bit. And I might be asking more questions than I can answer. But I want to know, are we willing to do it God's way? Or are we willing to do it our way? Because if we do it our way, let me tell you what would have happened if they had decided to take Jericho the way they normally fought battles. You know what that ditch would have been filled with? Bodies. Because there was no way an army was going to take Jericho by natural means. It wasn't going to happen. The city was designed to withstand that. If they had tried to do it in their own power, they failed. The only chance they had to ever have that obstacle come falling down is they had to do it God's way. Exactly and specifically, just as God had said, do it.